This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
All right, coming back in here, let's be joined now by Mike Keith, voice of the Titans here in the Geico Outkick Studios, where it's easy to save 15% or more on car insurance with Geico. Go to geico.com or call 800-947-AUTO. The only hard part, figuring out which way is easier. Biggest game in Nashville for the Titans since when, Mike Keith, as they prepare to host the Colts in what is a playoff play-in game?
I think probably since the playoff game after the 2008 season when they hosted Baltimore, when the Titans had the best record that year and it ended up being a divisional playoff game. Biggest regular season game, I think probably since a Monday night game with the Colts back in 2008 when the Titans were undefeated and able to win a game over Peyton Manning and company and stretch their record to 7-0 at that point. It's, you know, obviously a play-in game a year ago for the Titans when they took on Jacksonville in the season finale, but Jacksonville had already clinched their spot. So the fact that it's for both teams this way could end up being for the division, could end up being for a bye. I mean, there's so many ways this thing could twist around according to what happens in the early window, in the mid-afternoon window before Sunday night. I think it's been at least 10 years since there's been this big a game in Nashville.
Have the Titans ever played a Sunday night football game in Nashville?
A Sunday night football game in Nashville? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think they've been on NBC and quote-unquote the football night in America's slot there. So it's I think I'm correct in that, at least the modern incarnation that is on NBC right now.
Right. Yeah, I don't recall it either. We played Sunday night there to conclude 2008 in a game. We played Sunday night at Indianapolis to conclude 2008, and the team had nothing to play for. They sat everybody and ended up losing 23-0. So, I mean, this whole scenario draws back a lot of things, like the first ever Monday night game in Nashville back in 2000. Certainly some playoff atmosphere with Pittsburgh here after the 2003 season. You know, several of the big moments that we've had over 20 years are kind of all drawn together in this one moment. But for this franchise, which up until 2016 had spent nearly a decade being down, this is a huge moment and a huge opportunity because Nissan Stadium is going to be packed Sunday night, Clay.
I don't think there's any doubt. I told people in the open of the show today, I'll be there. I feel like I've won, you know, sometimes fantasy life status here because I'm going to be at the Alabama-Oklahoma game on Saturday night. I'll then turn around, fly back, and go to this game on Sunday night, what I think are the two most entertaining games, college football and the NFL of the weekend. All right, so Andrew Luck has won 10 games in a row against the Tennessee Titans. Do you think Mike Vrabel will spend any time at all mentioning that? It'll be impossible for the players not to hear it. But do you think that angle has any storyline, any significance other than a storyline hook in this game?
I don't think Mike Vrabel will mention it, Clay, because I think he knows it will be mentioned everywhere else. And he tries to really keep things fresh with the players. He doesn't try to belabor points. I think from his standpoint, Mike Vrabel, the player, would have known this. And because he knows that he would have known it, he's not gonna give it much time with the players. I would be dumbfounded if he spent much time with it. When he was told this initially before the first game, he was shocked. He's like, seriously?
Yeah.
He had no idea. So I know he's aware of it. I know the players are aware of it. And I think from Vrabel's style, that's absolutely the reason he won't spend any time with it. He never likes to be obvious. As if when somebody asks him a very obvious question, you know you're not going to get a great response from him. It's not what he likes the best. Take it from somebody who does it all the time. No, I don't think he spends any time with it.
All right, Mike Vrabel. What for people out there, obviously, who are familiar with Mike Vrabel as a player for the Patriots for so long, obviously the defensive coordinator for the Texans, what has he meant for this team? You've been around him. For people out there who may not be familiar with Vrabel as a head coach yet, what should they know? What has he meant this year?
He's a approach is very fresh. He really came into it and told the players, he said, I really want to get to know you off the field. Off the field, we have a very adult relationship. There's not a lot of separation between people. His attitude is we're all grown men. We're all being paid to take part in professional football. And so we're going to have a sort of a relationship that's not really as colleagues, but certainly it's cordial, it's helpful. We're not playing mind games or trying to motivate you off the field. But then you get on the field. And Clay, his whole attitude to the guys is he's like, listen, we are going to coach you hard. Because if we coach you hard, we'll win more games, you'll make more money, you'll play better, and you'll stay in this league longer. He said, I felt the most important thing that I got as a player was being coached hard. And so there are no friends out on the practice field. It is on, and it's energy, and it has all of this put together. But the minute they leave the practice field, it becomes very different. And his overall view of managing his staff, he's very different than I thought he would be. He's very less, you know, he is involved in the defense, but he's very much less that former player than he is more typical head coach in terms of overseeing, managing, directing. It's really been something to watch him, and he provides so much energy throughout the building and on the practice field. I have really been impressed with him, especially compared to first-time coaches in a variety of sports. Clay, he's not what I thought he would be. I'm sure there are things he's had to learn as a first-time coach, but you haven't noticed the missteps in a way that you often do with first-time head coaches.
We're talking to voice of the Titans, Mike Keith, as the Titans get ready for the biggest game of NFL Week 17, hosting the Indianapolis Colts in a playoff play-in game. Obviously, all week the discussion has been about Marcus Mariota and his health and whether he is or is not going to play. Is this something in your mind that we will know before Sunday? In other words, is this something that until he gets out on that field a couple of hours before the game and they have to make their decision about who's going to be active on the roster and everything else, that we probably will not know? Or do you think it's something we know beforehand?
I think it's something we may have a hint on today after practice, when Coach Vrabel talks to the media. After the Friday practice is the last time he speaks, I think you may get some hint. I think there may be some competitive advantage, however, to keeping it quiet. And so there may be a part of Vrabel that wants to keep it as quiet as possible, but I don't think he's going to play tons of games with it. I think you will get a sense, but I think you won't know for sure until Sunday. That's just my hunch, having worked with Coach Vrabel for a year.
Is there an advantage in not saying anything and saying, like, look, he's going to be questionable, we don't know if he's going to go until, like, basically the entire game prep has to be in?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I don't know the ins and outs about how messed up that is going to get the staff in Indianapolis. Matt Eberflus has done a really nice job with the defense there this year. I think they're going to do what they do. I think maybe from a standpoint of understanding his mobility might be an advantage, but otherwise I don't know that it makes that much of a difference. Teams certainly like to be able to hold cards any way they can to be able to have any sort of advantage, but I think you're asking a good question that I'm not sure that I know the answer to.
How much different is the offense when Blaine Gabbert is in as compared to Marcus Mariota from your perspective?
I think the difference is the mobility factor. Now, Gabbert moves pretty well, especially he's a bigger man. He's a taller, thicker guy. He's close to 240 pounds. But, you know, Blaine's a pretty good athlete. So he's not a statue back there, but he does not move like Marcus Mariota does. He does not have that ability. So I think teams are going to be interested in teeing off more against a Gabbert run offense than a Mariota run offense. That, to me, is going to be the biggest difference. Is I don't think you're going to see read option. I don't think you're going to see a lot of things where he's going to, you know, it's going to be set for him to take off. I think that would be a huge surprise. To me, that's the area that changes the most from Mariota to Gabbert.
If Mariota doesn't play, even if he does play, Derrick Henry is going to be a substantial portion of the game plan in a way that he was not the last time they played against the Colts. And frankly, the Titans got whipped in that game.
They did.
What has happened with Derrick Henry? Would it stun you at all? I mean, if I told you right now, hey, Derrick Henry is going to get 30 carries, I think you'd probably say, hey, that's a really good sign for the Titans because it means the game's going to be somewhat close because it means they're going to be able to lay on them. It's funny, I'm going to go see Alabama play on Saturday. Anybody who watched Derrick Henry play with the Alabama Crimson Tide knows he never really hit his stride until he got into the 20s. He's a guy that doesn't seem to tire, and he punishes a defense.
Right.
Is it fair to say that if the Titans get Derrick Henry rolling, they'd love to give him the ball 20, 25, 30, even 35 times? I know he got the ball, I think, 33 times against the Giants, and the Titans dominated in that game.
I would go for 40 if that would be
yeah.
okay. Could I take 40?
Yeah.
Because I think it does two things. First of all, this is not, in terms of the Indianapolis defense, they are not a massively big defense. Kind of similar to the Titans defense, honestly. So if you're able to line them up and pound it right at them, that's a huge deal and would obviously take a lot of pressure off whomever the quarterback might be and take some pressure off the offensive line who had a hard time protecting, particularly Mariota, in the game back on November 18th. The other thing it does too, Clay, which might be just as important, it keeps Andrew Luck off the field. And let's face it, Andrew Luck's only been sacked 17 times this year, 36 touchdown passes. He has been fantastic. I mean, there are so many good candidates for comeback player of the year in the NFL this year, and he's right at the top of the list. I mean, what a season he's had, particularly as this team's won 8 of their last 9. But if you get Derrick Henry the ball 30-plus times, I think it's a fantastic sign for the Titans because it would be the big equalizer in this game.
How nervous will you be before a game like this? I'm just curious when you
now.
Call. Yeah, I know you're talking to us on Friday morning, and you can obviously. I mean, I will be there as a fan, right? I'm a season ticket holder of the Titans. I want them to win desperately. I will take my kids, which is always a delicate situation because this is it's rare you get one of these situations in an NFL game in the regular season where if you win, you're like ecstatic. You feel like the entire season was a success, right? No matter whether you're the 6 seed or, like you said, potentially you could end up even the 2 seed, depending on what happens earlier in the day on Sunday. If you lose, it's like you're a kid who got a balloon at a party and you immediately let it go and it disappeared into the sky, right? Everybody's been with the kid who's all excited they got the balloon
yeah.
and then immediately it kind of deflates and flies off into the sky. Like, what does this game feel like for you as it gets closer and closer to kickoff? Because I feel like even though it's a play-in playoff game, if you lose in the playoffs, you're like, oh, well, you know, we made the playoffs.
Right.
It stinks to lose, but the goal of the season was fulfilled. If you lose at home in the final game of the regular season, it feels a lot different than losing in the playoffs. Am I wrong, or do you sort of feel that psychologically, too?
Well, I've lost at home in the playoffs, too. So
that's brutal.
And that was hard. But from the standpoint, I think you're dead on with what you're saying with the balloon analogy because this is such an opportunity. You know, that's what this is. If you're the Titans and you win this game, you electrify your fan base, you finally end the whole Andrew Luck has your number bit, all of those things go away, and you go into the playoffs on a 5-game win streak. And it's almost like at that point you're playing with house money
yeah.
in an AFC tournament this year that is wide open. You could see all 6 seeds, whomever they end up being, you could see all 6 seeds winning the AFC because of what's happened in various weeks of the season. You know, the Titans are a team that wore out the Patriots, wore out the Cowboys, beat Houston earlier in the year. You know, they've done some good things. And if you get this one, then you've won this clutch game to get into the playoffs. If you lose, it's, you know, you're 9-7. It's not the end of the world. It's a third straight winning season. You've had a lot of things go against you, but yeah, it's a vastly different feeling. And that's this game encompasses the beauty and the pain of the NFL, because somebody's walking away from this unbelievably excited, and that moment that all these difficult Sundays that you have go in the rearview mirror because you won this game, and then somebody has to feel this pain. And that's this game, game 256, is why we love the NFL the way we do.
Mike Keith, he's the voice of the Titans. It's a long day on Sunday getting ready for the kickoff, right?
Yes.
How much it's, you mentioned all it's at stake here for both the Colts and the Titans. We know now that Blake Bortles is going to be starting for the Jacksonville Jaguars on the road against the Texans. And obviously, if the Jags were able to pull off that upset, and they, you know, they beat the Colts 6-0 a few weeks ago, so certainly they have the defense to be capable of doing that. How much attention do you think the Titans and the Colts will be paying to that game that kicks off as they're kind of killing time waiting for this one? Or do you think they just completely tune out, coaching staff, players? I mean, how do you handle that?
How do you tune it out?
Yeah.
I mean, how can you logically – I mean, I can sit here and tell you I'm going to tune it out, and that makes me a big liar.
Yeah.
I would like to.
Because if you win, it just raises the stakes that much more, if you win, you get to host a home playoff game. And potentially, hell, if the Patriots went out and lost, then you could be talking about potentially getting a bye week.
Well, if the Patriots lose and Baltimore loses and Houston loses and you win, you're the number two seed.
Yeah.
Then you have to win one home game and potentially two home games, but certainly one home game and more than likely one road game to go to the Super Bowl. So you can go within like a 10-hour span. You can go from potentially being the number two seed in the AFC to being out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got everything coming down here. And that, you know, that's why every seat is sold at Nissan Stadium, and that's why I think NBC made a good decision moving this game, because this was the only one that sort of factored in this way. When they began looking at it, this was not going to be the target. That was the indication that was out there, is this game was not going to be the target. And then things just kind of ticked off the list. You know, at one point, the Titans were number 11 in the AFC playoff standings. And then it was like week by week, they went to 10, and it was kind of like the polls.
You
keep moving up the polls. Well, and then this happened, and a week out, we were given the indication, look, if you guys beat Washington and you get in a situation where it's going to be you and Indianapolis for the last spot, if either Baltimore or Pittsburgh loses, then you're Sunday Night Football. And now, you know, I mean, sitting around, we were here on Sunday working, watching those games, and we were dying on Sunday.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine how this Sunday may be. I think for the teams, it's, you know, I don't know how you sequester yourself, but I would think I'm going to try. I think I'm going to watch HGTV or a movie or, you know, watch some news program or, you know, do something, read a book, but it'll never work.
Outstanding stuff, as always, Mike Keith. We'll be watching and listening. Appreciate the time, my man, and good luck Sunday.
Clay, enjoy the two games this weekend.
Yeah, I can't wait. Happy to hop that flight down to Miami here shortly.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis, weeknights at 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
This will be the final top five, bottom five we do of the NFL regular season, since come Monday morning when we do this show on New Year's Eve, we will have the NFL playoffs all set and officially underway. We won't need to rank the teams anymore. We'll know how they all shook out and what exactly is left. So let's go ahead and dive in here, top five, bottom five. And I'll let Jason Martin, who is sitting in with me on this Friday, former producer of the show at JMart Outkick. He hosted on Wednesday and Thursday. Appreciate him sitting in for the show while I was out. Again, I want to reinforce, on Monday, it's Friday now, on Monday, we will be on New Year's Eve, breaking down everything that happens in the college football playoff as well as the NFL playoff race. But in the top five, I think there is no doubt that the Saints are the best team in the NFL. Number one team in the NFL is the Saints. They are and should be the favorite to win the Super Bowl. They are basically going to rest their guys against the Panthers. Then they have what would be 2 weeks at home. The road to the Super Bowl runs through New Orleans in some way. If they win those 2 weeks at home, they get to go to another dome in Atlanta. I like Drew Brees and the Saints to win the Super Bowl. In the second spot, I said I don't necessarily believe in them. But my God, if the Patriots aren't right back in the mix as the number two overall seed in the AFC, I think the AFC is wide open. And it pains me to say this, as much as I am ready for Brady and Belichick to shuffle off the stage as the dynasty, I think they're the team that is the most reliable right now in the entirety of the AFC. You look at the Chiefs, not sold on them down the stretch. You look at the Texans, certainly not sold on them. We don't know who's going to be in between the Ravens and the Steelers, but either one of those teams have given you reasons not to believe in them. And we also don't know necessarily what's going to happen in the sixth spot with the Titans or the Colts. So I got the Patriots in number two spot. Rams, they've been wobbly down the stretch, very much so, but I still have them in the three spot. In the four spot, the Chargers. And in the five spot, I have got the Kansas City Chiefs. Jason Martin, how would you respond to my top five, the final one of the regular season? Saints 1, Patriots 2, Rams 3, Chargers 4, Chiefs 5.
I've got the Patriots outside the top five. The rest of it, I basically agree with you. I've got Saints at 1. I've got the Bears at number 2. I know some people will say that's high, but their defense is going to travel. It is traveling. Mitch Trubisky can make some plays. I like their running game. I like Matt Nagy and just his play calling and how inventive they've been. I'll give them love. Then I've got the Rams at 3, even though they've leaked a little bit of oil. Maybe they got right, although it was against the worst team in the NFL. And go ahead and spoil that. And number 32, the Cardinals on Sunday. Chargers at 4 and Chiefs at 5, mainly because the Chargers were able to beat the Chiefs, and the Chargers have much more balance because they have a defense that can actually stop somebody. The Chiefs' defense is a complete and total embarrassment on every level. It's hard to even put them at 5. I wanted to get the Seahawks in there because the Seahawks just beat them, and they also have a bit of a defense to go along with Russell Wilson, but I'll keep Kansas City in the top 5. So I'll go Saints at 1, Bears at 2, Rams 3, Chargers 4, and Chiefs 5.
All right, obviously the big disagreement here is I have been critical of the Patriots all season. I think everything is rounding into shape right now for the Patriots. I think they'll go out and beat the Jets, although the Jets have been improved down the stretch of the season. I think they beat the Jets, and then you look at the rest of the AFC, and I actually think they're the most reliable team in the AFC. I don't think they're great. And I think Mike Keith was correct in hour one when he was talking with us. And he said, look, the Colts or the Titans, if you make the AFC playoff picture, this is the kind of schedule where you feel like any of the six teams that are in the playoffs could make it. But what is it about the Patriots that you're not sold on them to such a degree that you don't even have them in the top five?
They've got no playmakers. I don't trust their defense at all. Gronk is old and he hasn't had a good year. Brady either is not healthy or he's finally starting to show his age. Josh Gordon was the guy that was making plays for them, and he, of course, is no longer there. There's nothing that scares you except playing in their building, and that can certainly help you. But if I'm doing power rankings or if I'm trying to do a top five, bottom five, I'm basing it on the football team and what I see in front of me. And what I see is just not a very good New England Patriots team. Now, again, that ridiculous stat that I've used on this show before, that the Patriots with Tom Brady at quarterback since 2006 have only lost two games at home, period, regular season or playoffs. That's absurd. So are they going to go deep in the playoffs, and could they get to the Super Bowl? Yes. Do I think they're one of the five best teams in the NFL? Absolutely not.
See, here's the problem that I think is going to play out. I think that the Chiefs could very well choke and lose in the divisional round, which would mean that the road to the Super Bowl would run through Foxborough. And as bad as the Patriots have been at times this year, I just don't think they're going to lose at home with a spot to the Super Bowl available. And so that, to me, is why, if you look at it, when I rank top five, it's to me like the teams that are most likely to win the Super Bowl. And as much as it pains me, I think the most likely Super Bowl to me right now is Saints-Patriots. So there's my top five. I'm not buying into the Bears. I don't think that Mitchell Trubisky is healthy. And I don't buy into him playing really well in the postseason. Now, I do agree that the defense is very good, but I think ultimately the postseason typically turns into a quarterback derby, and your quarterback has to play really well. Even if you want to point last year to Nick Foles. Nick Foles is not a great quarterback, although he's played pretty decently again this year, and I think maybe he sent enough of a sign that somebody's going to give him $20 or $25 million in the offseason to play quarterback. But he played incredibly well once he got rolling in the postseason, and I just don't know that I believe Trubisky has that opportunity or ability right now. All right, let's go into the bottom five. Bottom five in the NFL right now. I have got as the 28th best team in the NFL right now, the Detroit Lions. 29 spot, I'm going with the Oakland Raiders, who obviously got a nice win and have played decently, let's be honest, down the stretch in beating both the Steelers and now the Broncos. They dominated that game. The Raiders, I've got at 30. I'm with you a little bit. We talked about the maybe that the Rams aren't 100% going to win that game. 31, I've got the Jets, and 32, I've got the Cardinals. Any disagreements on a substantial level there?
Run through five again.
Lions, Raiders, 49ers, Jets, Cardinals.
Okay, I've got the Jags still down there. I was torn. I'll keep the Bills at 28 right now. Just their offense is just really difficult to watch. I think they've done a decent job, actually, but again, I'm looking at what I'm seeing on the field. I got the Raiders at 29. I got the Jets at 30. This is a ridiculous stat about the Jets. The Jets have three Pro Bowlers this season. This may show how bad the Pro Bowl is. Three Pro Bowlers this season. That's as much as the rest of the AFC East combined, meaning the Patriots, the Dolphins, and the Bills have three, and the Jets have three. That's
that is
a
wild.
Stunning statistic to mention. I've got the Jaguars at 31 because they're just – I can't give this team any credit because of how me-first they are. They're going to bring Doug Marrone back. There's the Blake Bortles situation going into the final week. They've completely just flustered that entire situation, and their window may have been one playoff run, and it's over.
I agree with that. Here's what I would say about the Jags and the reason why I left them out. Seven of their last eight, other than the game that I think it's fair to say they mailed in on Thursday night against the Titans, the Jags have either won or been within six in seven of their last eight games. So while they have been bad in terms of result, the on-field difference has not been that substantial. And I want to hit you with that question. You just mentioned Blake Bortles getting the start against the Texans. To me, that's a sign that there may be some animus between the Jags and the Texans. Because if I'm a Texans fan, I hear that, and look, you may make fun of Blake Bortles, but I don't think there's any doubt that his ceiling is higher than Cody Kessler's, right? And I think it's interesting that they have decided to bring him back for the final game. I do think that what we've seen from Cody Kessler, the ceiling is like, hey, I won't turn the ball over necessarily, but I have absolutely – so the floor is like maybe a little bit higher, but there's no ceiling at all. To me, when I hear they're starting Blake Bortles for the finale, what I think is, hey, the Jags are really trying to win this game.
I mean, maybe so. The scenario I keep seeing in my head, especially with John Harbaugh coming back and the fact that Lamar Jackson's only loss to this point, whether or not it continues along his pathway or it's going to be short-lived in terms of his success, the only loss he had was to the Chiefs in overtime. He's played well in terms of not coughing it up, not making those key mistakes. Joe Flacco in Jacksonville is what I'm waiting to see happen.
Yeah.
It just seems like a move. And I'm not saying Joe Flacco is that good because I don't necessarily think that he is. But Jacksonville doesn't have a whole lot of options because of their cap situation and how much money that they've given to Blake Bortles. Joe Flacco, I think, would make them much better than they are now. So that's what I'm waiting to see. So I don't know. You know, the announcement came out a couple of days ago that Justin Herbert is going to stay in school.
Yep.
And he's going to stay at Oregon. So that's yet another quarterback that's
not
available.
Great quarterback
not
draft.
At all. Dwayne Haskins may be the first one off the board.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt at all about that. I mean, I think that it is a very mediocre quarterback draft. So if your team has been tanking in the hopes of getting somebody at the top of the draft board, you mentioned it, Dwayne Haskins, the 2020 draft.
That thing's going to be loaded.
Looks like it could be really, really
yes.
good. And maybe Herbert staying will draw somebody else out. Drew Locke will do well, I think, at the top of this year's draft. Maybe it'll draw somebody else out that people are not anticipating. Will Greer, obviously, sitting out the bowl game. So there are quarterbacks, but I don't know that there's any that immediately kind of set the pulse racing. So, yeah, that's certainly worth debating.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We're going to be joined by my guy, John McClain. He's at the Houston Chronicle. He's been there a while. He's with us down in Houston. Always appreciate when he comes on with us. And he is getting ready for what has turned into a game that could be pretty interesting between the Houston Texans and the Jacksonville Jaguars. And with the news coming out of Blake Bortles being the starting quarterback in this final game, to me, John, and you tell me if you think I'm reading this wrong, that's not necessarily a great sign for the Houston Texans, because it would suggest that the Jags are trying to put together a game plan to actually win this game as opposed to just going through the motions. I also think, as bad as Bortles has been at some time, his ceiling is higher than what Cody Kessler offered. His floor may be lower, too. Am I reading that correctly from your perspective, or do you think this is not as big of a deal as I'm making it out to be?
Clay, first of all, thanks for having me. Happy New Year. Hope you and your family had a great holiday. And, no, you're exactly right. The only reason to play Cody Kessler would be if they're looking to improve the draft position to get a higher draft choice in case they want to select a quarterback, or if they're going to sign one in free agency. But Bob, you're exactly right about Bortles. Now, in the first game this season, the one in which Deshaun Watson had a collapsed lung and a broken rib and a bruised sternum and had to take a bus from Houston to Jacksonville, the Texans won 20-7, and Bortles was so ineffective, Doug Marrone pulled him in the third quarter for Kessler after he fumbled at the Jaguars 12. He was just totally ineffective. But I think we saw this past Sunday when the Jaguars went to Miami, and Miami still had slight playoff hopes. Jaguars beat them 17-7. Kessler got hurt. Bortles came off the bench. I told everybody Blake Bortles will be the starting quarterback in this game. And last year, the Jaguars swept the Texans. And in the last game, Bortles threw four touchdown passes, threw for more 300 yards. Jadeveon Clowney called him trash after that game. So there are other instances in all the games he's played against the Texans. There have been some where he's awful, and there have been a couple where he's awesome. And he's auditioning for another job, because I think we all believe that he will not be the quarterback at Jacksonville last year. So he wants to go out with a big-time performance.
You just kind of hit on something that I think could be significant here, which is the Jags would like to spoil the Texans' seasons. Like, there's not a lot of great blood between these two teams. Is that a fair approximation of this rivalry?
It's strange, Clay, because you would think that the Texans' top rivalry would be with the Titans, the former Oilers, but it's never worked out that way. The Texans don't like the Jaguars. Jaguars don't like the Texans. Bill O'Brien was 6-0 against his close friend Doug Marrone. They've been best friends since they were GAs at Georgia Tech. And last year, the Jaguars, who went on to win the division, swept the Texans. And players have openly admitted, like Jadeveon Clowney, saying that about Bortles, that he was trash right after Bortles just trashed the defense. And Clowney had a great game in that game, but still, you know, he's gotten a lot of grief about that. But Jacksonville has had such a disappointing season. But if the Jaguars could go out with an upset victory over Miami and an upset victory over Houston to finish 6-10, that all season wouldn't taste quite so bitter.
I think that's well said. Let's talk about the Texans, because this season has been such a roller coaster ride. You lose the first several, I think start off 0-3, managed to get a couple of overtime wins in a row, win 9 games, I think it was, in a row, and now you've lost 2 out of 3 down the stretch. How good are the Texans?
First of all, this is a great stat. Deshaun Watson has not lost a game by more than one touchdown since he was a sophomore in high school.
Oh, my God. That's an amazing stat.
We asked him that today because the losses this year have been by 7-3, 5-3, and 2. They're 5 defeats. And they're getting beat up really bad down here. And I look back at Sunday's game at Philadelphia. Their running game was pathetic. Their pass defense was awful. And yet they had the game won because Watson threw 2 touchdown passes in 3-minute span at the end of the game, and they lost because the defense couldn't stop the Eagles. And so right now, the Texans' pass defense, they couldn't stop you and me. And their running game, this is what I just can't figure out, Clay. When the Texans threw 12 games this season, they were third in rushing, averaged 140 yards a game. In the nine-game winning streak, they averaged 146. In the last six games of the winning streak, they averaged 172 yards rushing. Then in the last three, they've averaged 66, and Watson has been their leading rusher in each game. And the offensive line has just been blown up. And I'm thinking, why in the world were they so good running the ball for so long? And I wrote yesterday that the running game and the pass defense have to be eyed out in the witness protection program, because how do you understand their sudden disappearance? But they have gone from awesome to awful. And whatever defenses are doing against them right now, they have no counter. So Watson now is having to take over the game and throw it 40 times, and that exposes him to more hits. He's been sacked 56 times. Last time anybody got sacked 60 was John Kitna in 2006. So that's something they want to avoid. But it's all on Watson's shoulders, and I guess from watching him in those big games at Clemson against Alabama and some really important games here at New England and Seattle, you know, he likes that white-hot spotlight. And so I think they'll be able to beat Jacksonville. Then they'll play, I think, Indianapolis, because I believe the Colts will beat the Titans.
What do you think of that matchup? The AFC, let's go into the larger NFC and AFC pictures. You've been covering the NFL for a long time. We're talking to John McClain. You can follow him on Twitter. I believe it's at McClain_NFL, if I'm not mistaken. You can correct me.
That's close enough.
on that, if I'm wrong. So let's go into the AFC. I think regardless of what happens with that play-in playoff game between the Titans and the Colts, the AFC is as wide open as I have seen in a long time. Would you agree?
Of course. It's because this is not the strongest Patriot team we've seen. They're 3-5 on the road. They do not have home field advantage. When they've won Super Bowls, they've had home field advantage. They're unbeaten at Gillette Stadium. They'll beat the Jets to be 8-0 at home, but they're 3-5 on the road. They've lost some bad teams on the road. So if they're going to go back to the Super Bowl in Atlanta, they're going to have to win a road game, and I wouldn't bet on it. Right now, it's wide open. Every team, Clay, has got a weakness. All those weaknesses can be exploited, but I'll say this about January football. You better be able to play defense, and that's scary for Kansas City, good for the Ravens. I tell you something's going to be weird when the Steelers are not in the playoffs. It just seems to be a birthright for them to be in, and unless Baltimore gets beat by the Browns, they're going to watch it on TV, and that is strange for Steelers fans.
We're talking to John McClain at McClain_on_NFL is where he is. I'll also tweet it out. You can thank him for coming on when I put up the podcast of this show later on Friday. All right, NFC. Drew Brees, let me start here. Would he be your MVP, or do you think Patrick Mahomes should be the MVP?
No, I'm voting for Brees. I have gone from Brees to Mahomes to Rivers back to Brees. Brees has been great against teams with winning records. He doesn't put up the gaudy yards that he has in the past. There's been like 9 5,000-yard games in history, and he has five of them. And I think he's as played as efficiently. He's always great, but he's been so efficient. They have home advantage. Their defense is better. They got a two-headed monster running back. Right now, Clay, the road to the Super Bowl goes through New Orleans, and I think the Saints are the leading contender to win the Super Bowl because I believe they're better than anything in the AFC.
So Saints or the field in the NFC, would you go Saints?
I would go Saints. I don't care who it is. Like the Chargers, I was on that bandwagon after they beat Kansas City. Then, of course, they lose bad at home, even though they don't have a home field advantage to the Ravens. And right now, I think New Orleans is clearly the best team in the NFL, the most balanced team in the NFL.
We're talking to John McClain. Who do you think? So you got the Saints coming out of the NFC. Who would you be your AFC playoff Super Bowl pick right now?
If you look at Andy Reid's playoff history, it's not been good, especially in Kansas City. Chargers, Philip Rivers. I would love to see Rivers in a Super Bowl, Clay. No offense to the Patriots, but I'm on my 40th Super Bowl. I'm tired of writing about them.
Yeah.
I'm tired of writing about Brady. I want some new blood in there, and the Chargers would be a tremendous story, especially because of Rivers, such a class act. I'd love to see Andy Reid get in there again. I'd like to see Patrick Mahomes. Think how exciting that would be if you had Breeze other than Mahomes. I don't see a clear favorite. Baltimore has a great defense, a good running game. And my sleeper just got beat 2 weeks ago by San Francisco. But the Seahawks are playing great defense. They're running the ball better than any time since their last Super Bowl. And Russell Wilson is a clutch quarterback. If I had to pick a sleeper to reach the Super Bowl, I would take Seattle. If I took a sleeper in the AFC, it would be Baltimore. And I guess because I want the Chargers to be in there for Philip Rivers, I'm going with L.A.
We're talking to John McClain. You can follow him on Twitter of the Houston Chronicle, at McClain_on_NFL. You're a Baylor Bear alum. What did it mean to you, the award that they gave you, I think it was last week?
Clay, thank you very much. They did. They informed me that every year Baylor picks 4 Alumni of the Year, Distinguished Alumni Award. And there's Baylor people all over the world doing some incredible things in every line of work. And they informed me that I'm one of the 4. And I'm there with a doctor and 2 others, and it just blew me away. That's one of the few times I've ever been speechless. You've known me for a while. I can yap, and I was just the only thing I thought back to my first Baylor game in 1960 when I was a Cub Scout and they beat Colorado, and I became a Baylor fan then, and all the times my dad told me about Baylor, I wish my mom and dad were still here to see it. And it's an incredible award, Clay, as you can imagine, and the only thing that bums me, I'm at the Super Bowl in Atlanta, and I would come back and go back to Atlanta, but the problem is that banquet is on a Friday night, and the next morning I've got to be at the Hall of Fame selection meeting at 6:30 a.m., and there's no way I could make it back, and so I'll have to miss it because there's no way I'm giving up that enormous responsibility of helping pick the class of 2019.
All right, John McClain, last question for you. You are a big-time movie buff. It is the holiday season. A lot of people are out going to movies, getting ready for the Oscars and everything else. What are the best movies that people should make sure that they have seen if they maybe have missed some?
Well, A Star is Born is going to clean up, and rightfully so. And my most underrated movie, Clay, that I promise anybody, if they see it, they're going to like it, is Green Book, with Marcel Ali and Viggo Mortensen.
Yep.
It is a tremendous movie. It is based on a true story, and it's one that just blows you away, learning things that African Americans in that book was published for between 36 and 66 to show black people where they could stay in hotels because they weren't allowed in white hotels, and not just in the South. And that's what it's about, the relationship between these two guys. And it is tremendous, uplifting, inspiring, and I would encourage anybody to see The Green Book.
John McClain, we appreciate the time. Enjoy that game on Sunday, and we look forward to talking to you down the stretch. But more importantly, congrats on that big Distinguished Alumni Award from Baylor.
Thank you, Clay. I can't wait to watch the games tomorrow, especially an Oklahoma-Alabama game. My goodness, that may last all night.
I'm hopping on. What are your picks, by the way, for the college football playoff? Because I'm about to go hop on a flight here as soon as we finish this hour and head down to Miami to watch that one in person.
I'm never going to pick against Alabama and Nick Saban ever, so I think it'll be high scoring and they'll win. Although, you worry about Tagovailoa's ankle. He was limping when he got off the plane. I saw him on TV.
Yep.
And then the other one, I like Clemson. There's a lot of Clemson players here, DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson. I'm around them a lot. So they're so excited about it. As Watson told us, he said, we got to get the dub and go to the Natty. He was in the Natty twice, and so I'm going with Clemson and Alabama for the third time.
Outstanding stuff as always, John McClain, at McClain_on_NFL. Appreciate the time, my man.
Thanks very much, Clay. Happy New Year.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
I have got you gambling picks, and I've got you gambling picks here for both the NFL and for college football as we head into the weekend and a lot of these games taking place. It's going to be a great weekend for football if you are a big football fan, as I know the vast majority of you listening to us right now are. There's been a lot of good games going on for a while, but as we head in to this weekend and get ready for the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday games, let me go ahead and give you some of my picks so you guys can sit back and hopefully make some money. And they start on this tonight on a game going on Friday afternoon, even as opposed to tonight, the Syracuse West Virginia game. I'm on the over there. It's sitting right around 67. I'm on the over. Then we move into Saturday early game, Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, Florida going up against Michigan. I like the Gators plus 7.5. I got this game, this pick out earlier for my VIPs. It's now down to around 6 or 6.5. I also like the under 51. I think the Gators defense will show up and play pretty well, so I'd encourage you to hop in on that one. Later that same day, South Carolina and UVA playing in the Belk Bowl. I like the Gamecocks to win and cover that game against Virginia. Then we roll into the South Carolina game. I just gave you that one. Sorry, I'm scrolling through looking at all these picks. Then we get into the playoff games. And look, I really like Alabama. This line got down to 13.5. I gave it out to you on Wednesday on Lock It In, Wednesday afternoon, my gambling television show on FS1, which, by the way, be doing later today. If some of you are still off work or whatever and you're looking for something to entertain yourselves, pass some time. I'll be live from Miami with the television show on Friday afternoon. I gave this pick out, though, on Wednesday afternoon, Bama minus 13.5. I think Bama pulls away in this one. I also like the under. I think the under is the play here. I think Alabama is going to control the pace. I think they will win this game outright. My prediction, something like 45-24 or 45-24. I think they take the air out of the football. I think they have a great deal of success against Oklahoma. In the other big game that's going on, Notre Dame-Clemson. I like Notre Dame plus 13 against Clemson, and I like the over 55. That, to me, is the play in the college football playoff. All right, so all of that is out there. Let me bring you in, J-Mart. You heard all my picks. Anything in particular you like? I'll give you the rest of my bowl game picks as we move into Monday. I'll give you those out on Monday. But those are the picks for Saturday. Your thoughts as I queue up the NFL picks here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really disagree other than I think that Clemson is going to cover against Notre Dame. Alabama and Oklahoma, I could definitely see going in that direction. We've seen high-powered offenses come in that have not seen something like what they see against Alabama, and it takes them so long to try and figure it out that they end up just not being able to score enough points. We saw Washington unable to really score a couple of years ago against them when they had an opportunity. So it could very well go that way. There are, you know, there's some other interesting matchups. The Florida-Michigan game is intriguing. You feel like Michigan should be able to handle business in that game. And then, you know, West Virginia-Syracuse. West Virginia should be able to score, but Syracuse has a nasty defense, and they also have a propensity to try and just knock a quarterback out of a game. We've seen that. We've seen them hit really, really hard. West Virginia goes as their offense goes, just like basically everybody.
And remember, they don't have Will Grier.
Yeah, and they're not going to have him.
If you got in early, this is where, you know, having some information could help. West Virginia was a 7.5-point favorite. This line has swung by 8.5 points. So if you were smart enough to jump in on Syracuse plus 7.5, you got a huge middle there. But Will Grier sitting out this game obviously impacts it in a really, really substantive and substantial way.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, they've got all-world guys at receiver, but not having Will Grier makes a big difference. And I do think that Syracuse is a really solid team. So that's an interesting one. I didn't hear you mention Purdue and Auburn. I don't know if you had a pick there or not. I'm fascinated by that game.
I was toying around with that one. You know, first of all, I have no idea how Auburn's going to play.
Right.
I didn't feel comfortable in that game. A lot of bowl gambling is figuring out two things. One, who's going to have the motivation, right? Because you set out for a month. Who really is going to show up and perform at a high level? And two, who's playing? So we're still finding out some of the stuff about who's playing and how aggressive they're going to be to play through injuries. But the motivation factor to me in Purdue-Auburn, almost impossible to figure out, so I set it out.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on that, and the motivation point is the one that I always look at because, and this is going to upset some people that don't want to hear it, but Auburn didn't care about playing Central Florida last year.
Right.
I know that Central Florida continues to talk about how we knocked down this great SEC team that should have been in the college football playoff. No, you really didn't. You didn't knock off an Auburn team that cared. You also beat one that was missing a couple of its key players. I continue to believe that if that game actually mattered, Auburn would have beaten Central Florida by 2 touchdowns last year. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm sticking to that, and I'm never going to be proven wrong because the game was never played. But yeah, the want to factor in these basically exhibition games, with the exception of the two playoff games, it really, I don't gamble, but it would make it really difficult on me to gamble because you just do have to sit there and say, all right, do these guys care and how many people are sitting out? I mean, Major Applewhite got beat 70-14 by
yeah.
Army.
Yes, that was not a very pleasant game if you were a Houston fan. And then he lost his offensive coordinator, Kendall Briles,
yeah.
to Florida State. So that's an ugly situation going on there right now. All right, NFL weekend, week 17, I'll give you the picks that I really like. We now know that Blake Bortles is going to start. I went on Lock It In on Monday, and I said I like the Jags at +7.5. That number now down to around 6. I think the Jags pull off the upset. And if you look at this game, I think the Jags, by starting Blake Bortles, are sending a message. We want to go out with a win. I don't like how the Texans' offensive line is blocking right now for Deshaun Watson. I don't like where their running game has gone. I think that Blake Bortles comes out and knows that this is his stage, final game before he either gets traded or becomes a free agent, wants to show what he can do against a playoff team. I really do think the Jags win this game. I think the Jags win it outright, but I love them plus the 6 points. I loved them even more plus the 7.5. In terms of other games that matter in the playoff race, I like the Browns. I like Baker Mayfield. I told you earlier in the show that I think Baker Mayfield has to be your rookie of the year. I think that he's going to go out. It wouldn't stun me at all. I picked the Ravens to win this game, if you heard my playoff picks, but it wouldn't stun me if the Browns went on the road and beat the Ravens. We saw this happen last year. Remember, with the way the Bengals beat the Ravens to knock them out of the playoffs. So I like the Browns here plus the 6 to cover. And I like the Eagles to get the win pretty easily over the Redskins. I think that the Chiefs will win with ease over the Raiders. I think the Vikings, this line now down to around 4. People are trying to figure out what the Bears are going to do. I wouldn't touch this game, even though it's a big game in the playoff race, because it's hard to figure out exactly what the situations are going to be at play here. And then, look, I like the Titans, and I know the quarterback situation is going to be an uncertainty, but to me, that just means they're going to run Derrick Henry. You look at common opponents. Titans beat the Giants 17-0. The game was not that close in the end. Colts were very lucky to get past the Giants. Titans won on the road. Colts were lucky to get past the Giants. Titans destroyed the Jacksonville Jaguars on a Thursday night game. Colts went on the road and lost to them outright. I know the Colts beat the Texans and the Titans lost to the Texans, but I think you look at the overall common opponents down the stretch, I feel better about the way the Titans are playing. I know the uncertainty at quarterback is unfortunate, but I think right now this is Derrick Henry's team. I think they lay on him. I think the Titans win this game outright. Those are my gambling picks in the NFL as we run through it. And if you're just waking up across the country right now, my final picks for the AFC and the NFC: Chiefs 1, Patriots 2, Ravens 3, Titans 4, Chargers 5, Texans 6. And in the NFC, I think we go with the Saints, the Rams, the Bears, the Cowboys, the Seahawks, and the Vikings in that order, meaning your wild card games. My final prediction for you as we head into the weekend, I think we get Texans, Ravens, Chargers at Titans, Vikings at Bears, Seahawks at Cowboys, and I think we got another one for the fourth year in a row, the Alabama Crimson Tide against the Clemson Tigers.